Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Good morning, Jill. How are you?
I am so excited because it is the month of April. How are you, though?
Ooh, I'm good. I'm really good. But tell me why you're excited about April besides what I think it is.
Well, yes, you already know. But for any of our listeners out there, April 25th is the launch of my memoir, Perfectly Queer, the thing I never thought would happen in my life, both coming out as gay and then also being an author.
Are you so excited?
I am. It's kind of an unreal experience. So I'm really excited too that we get to talk about it because you were so kind and generous to read my story. You are in my story, but then also you've read it and shared your opinion on the story as well. And so I'm really excited that we get to talk about it because it's one thing to write the story. It's another to have a conversation about it.
Well, I have been so looking forward to this. First of all, I have to say that I kind of feel like I'm the lucky goose in the world because I did get a sneak peek and I got to read it. So I kind of feel like Nostradamus when he had the vision of everything. That's kind of how I feel. I feel like I've got this vision of what's going to happen for Jill, and just, I love this. I'm so excited. So I'm super excited that we get to talk about it. And then I just feel like there was so much that I learned even about my life through reading your book. And I don't anticipate that I will come out as a lesbian at 52. But there's still so much that I learned from your book. So I'm actually excited to talk about it, not just to hear a little bit about your story, but to maybe even invite our listeners to recognize that there might be elements of their own story in this book, even if they don't identify as perfectly queer.
Right. Which is really funny because really early on in the process, when I was just writing and sharing my story, just with a small group, it was with you and Sarah Carr, who her poetry is also in the beginning of my book, and a few other friends. When I initially shared my stories with you, I thought, well, they're not going to have any interest in this. They're all, you know, straight women in heterosexual relationships, or they've been in heterosexual relationships or marriages. Like, why would anyone care to read a memoir about a 38-year-old who comes out as a lesbian in midlife? And so in my mind, the audience for this book was like 7 people. And so I'm really grateful that you were able to read it, and I'm slowly realizing or rapidly realizing that it does apply to a broader audience. Mm-hmm. Because again, too, the LGBTQ plus identity, even if you don't take it on as your own, chances are you know somebody, or you have someone in your family, or you have a friend who considers themselves part of that community. And so the book hopefully will give a little bit more perspective on that as well.
Well, we talked about that a couple of episodes ago, that statistically at this point, it's not possible for us to not know somebody who identifies LGBTQ, even if they are not yet identifying that way publicly and out loud. So I actually agree. I feel like there's elements of your story, whether somebody locates themselves as the 35-year-old who's considering coming out to her opposite sex partner, mm-hmm. or as the mother who is recognizing some of these conversations that she has with her own children and realizing, oh, I might have the ability to change this trajectory or support my kiddo in a different way. Like, there is something here to be learned for every person in every walk of life. It's just going to depend on where you find yourself today in your own story.
Yeah.
So I'm so super excited.
Yeah, I'm like, that is so sweet. And also my armpits are sweating profusely right now at the thought of people reading this story. So just to back up,
get the armpits to settle down.
Right. I'll just flap a little here. Nobody can see that. But yeah, so this story is being published by Hay House Publishing, and there will be the hard copy book of Perfectly Queer. There's a Kindle version. And I'm so excited, and this will explain a little bit why my voice is a little raspy now or may crack along the way, but I've been in a recording studio this week to record the audiobook version of it, which I am so excited about for multiple reasons. One primarily being that there are a lot of people out there who maybe still don't feel comfortable walking around with a book that says queer across the cover. Uh-huh. But also I was educated too that for folks who are visually impaired, that having a Kindle book read to you by the digital voice is incredibly obnoxious. And so audiobooks really help reach a wider audience and make these stories more accessible to everyone. So I'm really grateful to Hay House that they've done the audiobook, and I sound a little bit like a frog right now.
Well, and I actually have to add on to that I feel like whenever we listen to the audiobook read by the author, we feel a lot more, at least this is my perspective, I feel more intimately connected to the author. So I am actually super excited for the Audible version of it.
And unlike this podcast where I seem to cry every episode, I came close while I was reading the book, but I didn't actually cry. So there's some emotion in there though. Anyways, okay, back to the book.
Well, the first thing I actually want to, so again, for our listeners, I have already read the book. I loved it. There were a couple of themes that I noticed as I read the book. And definitely there were a couple of things that I wanted to pull out of the book and ask you about specifically. And so this is going to be mostly you telling me your story. I'm going to pop in every once in a while if I think that there's any place that the science needs to come into it. Mm-hmm. But we're going to see. I'm kind of excited. So everybody that's listening, Jill is coming in cold. She wrote the book.
Yes.
So the first thing I actually want to talk a teeny little bit about, because I feel like it's a common thread all throughout your story, that if we were to pull this one thread out of the story, it would almost crumble. Mm. Not crumble, like be destroyed, but it is the red thread. Mm-hmm. And that is the compulsory heterosexuality. Mm. And what I think is interesting that anybody who has not been following you on this journey might not realize is that was the original name of your book or something with that in its title, right?
Yes. So when I initially submitted my book proposal, the book was called A Chronic Case of Hetero, which I thought was the funniest title that I had ever come up with. It probably did help get my book proposal noticed, but very quickly into the process, the sales team came back and said, yeah, we're not going to sell a book with that title. So brainstorm something else. And we went through a lot of different options and finally landed on Perfectly Queer. And I had some reservation with that because, again, I knew that as a closeted person, I would not have wanted to carry around a book that said queer. And I know even in some allies and not yet allies would probably not feel comfortable carrying around a book with that. And at the same time, it was really important for me to have that word on the cover because I want to normalize it. I want to take the energy and the charge out of the word, and it just becomes another descriptor as opposed to good or bad. It just is.
I actually think that that's super interesting because I feel like pairing the word queer with perfectly is a wonderful way to explain, I think, the queer experience, if the queer experience is being able to be lived authentically. Mm. Because the whole purpose of and even in queer theory, I love queer theory from a framework perspective, and I think it applies to a lot of things, not only the LGBTQ experience, but it's any experience that feels outside of the normal. Mm-hmm. And so Gabor Maté just wrote the book, The Myth of Normal. There is no normal. So everything is queer. So it's in our queerness that we are actually in our perfect state because we're exploring, we're learning, we're growing, we're expanding. So I actually love the two words paired together, but I do think that's interesting because I still, even when I hear my son call him and his group of friends, he calls them all the queers. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear him say it, I think, oh, but isn't that an insult?
Yeah.
So I still have to get used to that word too. So I love that you bring that up.
Yeah, we all do. I mean, really, and the book talks about this too, is just even the comfort or discomfort with words and labels. Mm-hmm. But back to your point of compulsory heterosexuality.
Yes, that's what we need to talk about.
Yes. So compulsory heterosexuality, for anyone who's not familiar, or also called comp het, is a term that's actually been around since the 70s. I think Adrian Rich is the person who is credited with the origination of the word. But basically, it is the ways that we kind of assume or default to heterosexuality with everyone in our life. And you're right, there are a lot of threads in that in the book. It can be a negative thing in that it does have negative consequences to it in the book. But I don't think when a lot of people are doing actions or saying things that could be classified as like comp-het type of things, I don't know that a lot of people are doing it with necessarily like a negative or a nefarious or a bad intention behind it, assuming that people are heterosexual. I don't know the intention is always bad, but we definitely have to have an awareness of it. Because it's not good, the result.
Well, I think one of the things, like if you think about other places in history where we've heard the word compulsory, mm-hmm. the word compulsory gives us it has a negative connotation in the, like you said, in that I am intentionally forcing you to be heterosexual. Mm-hmm. And if you're putting it in context of that, there is nobody in the world who is forcing somebody to be heterosexual. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as compulsory perfectionism. There is nobody who's walking around with a stick or a cattle prod beating us up every time we're less than perfect. That's why social narratives are so important, right? That's what compulsory means, is we can't locate ourselves because the normal, the social narrative, everything around us looks hetero.
Right. We see a lot of that going on right now. I mean, me being in Florida and with Don't Say Gay, trying to take any sort of books or education out of the school system. Now they're talking about up till eighth grade that relates to anything not heterosexual.
Yeah.
Is just another example of saying is compulsory heterosexuality. This is the expectation. This is the norm. And this is what we're going to show you as the example of this is how you should live.
The norm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It shows up in a lot of places.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really did notice in your book is that it showed up a lot in your life as you were growing up and as you were having conversations with your mom about dating or with your friends, even again, not just with who you were going to date and who you were going to find intimate relationships with, but really this concept of compulsory behavior is in a lot of places in your book with where you went to college and what you chose to study. Like it's all through your book, this kind of concept of following the prescribed narrative for you.
Definitely. There's a chapter in the book where I'm about to graduate college and get my degree in business and specialize in accounting. And I got a job with a Big Four accounting firm. And I say that I was at the top of supposed to mountain because I had the degree, I had the job, I had, you know, at that point, my then eventually spouse and I had been dating for 4 years in college. So we had a strong, steady relationship. I was doing all of the things that I had been told through my life that like, this is it. This is how you do living. But obviously in that chapter, it all kind of unravels when the person asked me the question about what my dreams were for life.
Yeah, kind of froze you.
Like it really did.
As I read the chapter, and I even remember sitting there thinking how often that I've done that, even with my kids, and asked my kids, what do you see for yourself? Mm. And then at this stage of my life, I see myself doing the same thing. Wait, what do I really want? I don't know. What's the right answer?
Right.
So tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh, well, I remember that was just, it was a really hard day for me because I realized how incongruent my dreams, what I hoped for in life, and then everything that I thought I was supposed to do, how different they were. And then realizing that I couldn't even connect the dots between the two to see how I would get from being an accountant to what I really dreamed of. And that at the time was, so I had studied abroad as an exchange student in Bolivia when I was 15 years old. And while I was there for the year, I worked in a home for orphaned and abandoned babies and toddlers. And it really touched my heart. And my dream was to be able to go back to that home for children and be able to provide more support for them, specifically through therapeutic touch. And that was even before I was a massage therapist. I was like, oh, touch seems to have a really positive impact on the development of humans. That was my dream. And so when the guy said to me, well, how do you see yourself ever doing that as an accountant? And it was like my insides crumbled. And so I just kind of had to go back to like, okay, but that's, dreams are dreams. And you put those aside. I need to focus on what I'm supposed to do in this life. And that's the, again, the compulsory piece of it. Aside from that though, and I love, oh, sorry, you have a thought.
No, I want you to keep going. I can hold my thought.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say though, is that you were talking about how you've seen as a mother, how compulsory kind of thoughts or hopes or ideals play out. And I think a decent amount of the compulsory heterosexuality that's mentioned in my book, even though it's not identified specifically as such, did come from my mom. And what And what I want to clarify there is like, I had an awesome upbringing. My mom and I were so close. I was like, I have the best mom in the world. We had a wonderful relationship and we still do. We've, you know, there has been ebb and flow there, but there's nothing that my mom did. And I'm sure it's the same with you and your children. You're never trying to create a negative consequence. I don't think my mom was ever trying to cause any sort of harm or negativity by some of the things that she did. But in hindsight, you know, we just talked about the other day, we just talked about the chapter in my book where I'm in high school and we pull out my high school yearbook and she sits me down on the floor and we play the game of, let's find Jill a boyfriend or die by 1,000 paper cuts.
And hey, so I want to put a pin in this.
Okay.
This is what we're going to talk about in just a second.
Okay. Okay.
But before we get there, I actually want to talk about how you even came up with the alternative vision. So you're in this compulsory state. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of, you're at the top of supposed to mountain, but you still have some little element of a vision of what you might want for your life. So you knew there was an incongruence. How did you create that vision
that for yourself? That is a really good question. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Because it's not in your book.
The only thing I can say is that I ignored my intuition for a lot of my life. And I knew that I was ignoring my intuition and I really hoped it would come back. And so slowly but surely, I would start to feel this small light or flicker within me when I thought about certain things or when I was around certain people or when I did certain activities. And I would find like, oh, well, that really lights me up. Well, that's interesting. Store that away. Like, and working at the orphanage was one of those things that really lit me up and spoke to my heart. But I put it on a shelf of, well, that's not real life. You can't really do that. And obviously I did that with a lot of aspects of my life.
You did that in a lot of ways. And that's kind of what I wanted to come up with and talk about before we actually talked about that concept of the supposed to mountain. Mm. I think that there's a lot of value to helping ourselves as the self-discoverer, but also helping ourselves as the other, like as the guide, so as the parent or the best friend or the spouse or whoever it is. Like yeah. It's really important for us to understand where supposed to mountain is built or how it is built. But the thing that I think is so important, and this is the piece that that's what I wanted to hear you say, we have to know what lights us up. Yeah. And we can't actually conquer supposed to mountain without that fire. So it's learning to recognize that light within us that helps us decide if supposed to mountain is for us or not.
Yeah. And that brings me to a line from the book. I hope you don't mind if I share real quick, but there was a point in the story where I said, I wanted to seek comfort in the queer world. I hoped for any opportunity to hang out with Amy and my other LGBTQ+ friends. I had reached the point where I wanted to be as close to gay as possible without actually being gay. I wanted the light I felt from the gay community without the darkness from society that came from being a member of the gay community. And so, you know, aside from career-wise, what lit me up, I also recognized that it was being around queer people and in the queer community that for some reason, obviously we all know now, it brought out a very different and special and good feeling in me of, I love this. And yet there was still so much other darkness around, or I guess the weight of the supposed to mountain was so much greater that, again, I kind of shelved that light and said, this is fine and all, but really I'm not ready to address that light because I really just need to keep climbing this mountain.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to put us waiting for the second episode.
Okay.
To talk about that supposed to mountain. Yeah, I love all of this, but I'm honestly, I feel like this is a really good place for us to pause, but I do want to send our listeners with a little bit of homework. So I want them to isolate where they are or locate where they are. If they are somebody who is internally navigating the LGBTQ coming out process, or if you are somebody who is just really gut check, or am I somebody who has actually put up this supposed to mountain for one of my children, one of my friends, my family members, anybody? Am I adding to supposed to mountain, or am I actually providing a light so that somebody can get off that mountain if they need to? So I want to, that's the homework I'm going to give our listeners. Do you have anything that you want to say before we end on a cliffhanger?
No, I kind of love that we're talking about a mountain and a cliffhanger, and this is great. So tune in next week for Fear Factor Gay Edition.
Fear Factor coming out edition.
Exactly. All right. You keep shining that light bright.
Love it. Okay. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, US podcast listeners, we want to come to you. If you're interested in having a perfectly queer book event with me, Jillian Abbey, and Dr. Trisha, email us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com or DM us on our social media accounts and let us know where you're at in the US. We would love to coordinate and connect with you, to meet you in person, and we appreciate your support. Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Q Crew.